On Tuesday, July the 18th in Tynwald, the island's chief minister, Alfred Cannon, offered an apology.
The 50th anniversary of the Somerland fire is the right moment for this government to offer an apology for the sufferings caused by the wrongs of the past. The Somerland story, its aftermath and legacy will continue for years to come.
It was the fire that broke a nation's heart.
This is William Hardcastle, and later in today's World at One, why did Somerland burn so fiercely and so cruelly?
The complex that was to bring sunshine to the island and its visitors brought instead dismay and horror.
When I saw the fire actually start, there was a small puff of grey smoke that came from a hut alongside of it.
It's 50 years since the Somerland fire. There are still questions about what happened and how it could have happened.
Somerland this morning is a scene of desolation. This normally busy area of the town is absolutely quiet. And as we stand and look up at the former building that was Somerland, it's a spider's web of twisted metal, burnt and charred black. The concrete walls, even they, are charred. The police and ambulance services are still here, and the fire services, and work is still going on inside the building. As I say, a quietness has descended on this area that last night, just 8 o'clock, was a blazing inferno with the loss of some 35 lives. The quietness is felt here by everyone. The press, the photographers are standing around quietly and looking at what was this £2 million complex, which, as I say, is starkly outlined against the grey skies, just a twisted web of charred and burnt metal. The services are still standing by. As I say, work is still going on inside, the important work of trying to find out how the fire actually started. It's quiet, it's desolate, and people are really feeling the tragedy that happened here just some 14 and a half hours ago.
This is an account of the disaster that took 50 lives, in the words of those that were there. What follows, many will find distressing.
On the night of the fire, I was on duty as a policeman with my dog walking along Woodville Terrace Lane. When I saw the fire actually start, there was a small puff of grey smoke that came from a hut alongside of it. I immediately radioed to the headquarters and told them what I'd seen and asked them to call the fire brigade. As it was my beat, I arranged that I would meet a car at Broadway and go and deal with the incident. When we were going along the promenade in the car, Terry Miles was the driver. It was obvious that the fire was getting worse, and I radioed in. I remember my exact words: "This is a serious fire. We need extra people here." As we went along the promenade, I was thinking about the duties of police at fires from my training days. And the main duty was isolate the scene, so we picked up another constable on the way over, dropped him off at the bottom of Summerhill, and asked him to stop all traffic coming through there. And 10 miles took me to Port Jack, and I stopped all traffic coming in the other direction. About 20 minutes later, and told to go down to the summon the fire itself, I was working under the veranda near the MER.
A Manx Radio presenter, Alan Jackson, arrived at the fire before the fire services had got there, before even the police arrived. On a simple cassette recorder he'd been given as a present shortly before, he placed on record what he was seeing.
There's absolute pandemonium here. The Somerland is ablaze and blazing down. The fire is spreading very rapidly indeed, and it would seem that one of the slot machines has caught fire and started to blaze. And it's obvious that the whole place... Have you any idea how it started, love?
Pardon?
Have you any idea how it started?
Not at least.
No? Well, do you have any idea, sir?
No idea.
You don't know where it started?
No.
Thank you. Excuse me, sir, are you an official of Somerland?
Pardon?
Are you an official here?
No, sir.
You don't know how it started?
No.
There's absolute panic here at Somerland.
I was leaving the building after being on duty from early morning at about 5 to 8, and my attention was drawn to smoke coming from what we knew as the Arnold Palmer Golf Links area. Now, in this area, the main structure of the building, it was clad in what's known as galbestos. pitch-covered galvanised steel, and that was riveted to the main steel structure. I noticed as the boys were trying to contain the fire with the hose that the steel was expanding and the galbestos plates were buckling and the wind was blowing the flames interior of the building. Now, I knew inside the actual structure at this point was lined further with 3x2 studding, which held the inside wall. I realised that if this went on fire, something really serious was going to happen. So I left the boys with the hose and tried to give them instruction to pull the thing away from the building, but the heat was so intense we couldn't get near enough.
People are running all over the place, and it would seem... Have you any idea how it started, sir?
No idea.
No?
A machine outside in the concrete roof sorted off. And
the machine outside in the concrete roof?
It short-circuited.
Did it?
And the chaps getting the hose pipe apart, and I helped them with the hose pipe to get out. And then it's another machine started inside after.
Yes, so it was an electrical fault, do you reckon?
Electrical fault, huh?
Yeah. And it's all right. Were there many people around when it started?
Oh yes, it was packed all.
Yeah. And in what department was this? On the roof?
On the roof, on the flat roof outside.
Yes.
Outside where the machines are, you know.
There seems to be lots and lots of people in the place.
Oh, there is.
Now, what time do you reckon this was? I mean, it's 5 past 8 now, isn't it?
Oh, 25 minutes.
About 25 minutes?
No, 5 minutes.
Oh, 5 minutes. Five minutes.
5 to 6 minutes.
So it's just started in actual fact.
Yes, sir.
5 minutes.
So I left the boys with the hose and tried to give them instruction to pull the thing away from the building, but the heat was so intense we couldn't get near enough. So I returned into the building and went up into the show bar area, the actual bar area of the show bar, smashed a hole in the wall, and took a hose from the nearest point and pushed it into the wall to try to contain the fire from the top with this single hose. You must remember the hoses were not what we would accept as a fire hose. They weren't much more than garden hoses, only inch bore rubber. And we'd had a problem earlier on in the season with this area with low pressure. I went back into the show bar where there was 200-odd people sitting, and I instructed the manageress to evacuate the premises immediately. Now, in them days, it was acceptable that a key to all emergency doors could be placed in a glass box in the vicinity. I immediately went to the glass boxes, took out the keys, and got through the crush to do this, and it was a bit hard going, and opened all the doors, and everybody then started to emerge from the building and run down towards the bath exit.
And the fire engine has just arrived. Well, the fire people are here at the present moment in time, and it looks as if most of the people are getting away very safely. Now, the problem is now it's really belching away. Oh, there's fire brigade at the top now. There's another fire engine coming along. Here comes the police now. The heat is starting to build up now, and we're a good 100 yards away, at least 200 yards away from the flames, and the heat is starting to build up even as I speak to you right now. It looks as if there's no hope for Summerland, without a shadow of a doubt.
When the fire broke out, it soon became apparent that in the event of an emergency, there was an inherent flaw in the design of the building in the separation of facilities for parents and their children. Normally, mums and dads were able to relax by the side of the artificial lagoon or at the bars, secure in the knowledge their children were safely in their own area, enjoying themselves. But when an emergency happened, parents' first thought was for their children, who were on other levels in the great complex, and panic set in as they went looking for them.
People are calling all over the place, looking round for children, and families are split up. But
we had to jump from the top floor to the next one.
You had to jump, did you? Was it? What started the panic?
Well, I don't know. It was just smoke pouring in.
Yes. And whereabouts were you on the building?
Up on the top.
Right on the top floor.
Yeah.
Is all your family safe? You're all right, are you?
We don't know who she belongs to. She was nearly getting trampled on.
Oh, you're all right, are you, love?
Yes.
Yes, good, good.
We don't know her name.
No, well, the place to go will be Douglas Police Station, or indeed any police officer, or indeed just to
Where was the fire?
To hang around. This is the thing.
Get away from it.
Yes, indeed. Keep moving. Yes, there's lots of children coming down with other people, you see. Lots of children are coming down. They are handling them. You're all right. No. There are lots of people coming down. You're all right, my love. There is great confusion around the place. Everybody's looking for children. This, of course, is the main thing. But now there seems to be a certain amount of calm coming over the place with the majority of the people away from the main building. But this is, of course, very important that children are kept safe. There are lots of children in other parents' arms, and the problem is trying to find the right parents. Summerland is really ablaze now. It really is blackening the sky here in Douglas Harbour. The flames are roaring out of the windows. As I say, there is a certain amount of calm on the platform stairs going up now. The officials seem to have... The officials seem to be in some kind of control, and they are now kind of herding the crowd around with the police trying to ferry the people around. There are lots of, obviously, there are people all over the place waiting, looking for relatives or friends of people of the family. Certainly Douglas has never witnessed an experience like this before.
The whole Onchan side of the building, which was clad in asbestos, torched very, very quickly. And then when that had burnt out, it then spread along to what we know as Auraglass. But by this time, most of the building had... most of the damage had been done, and Auraglass was only a casing, and at that time there was nobody in the building.
I remember quite clearly Dr. Ham there. Personally, I think he deserved a medal for the way he worked that night. He was going through all the people who were suffering from smoke damage, lying on the ground, saying which ones to treat, which ones not to treat. In other words, the ones that were dead and the ones who had a chance of living. I helped then with taking people out of Summerland, the lower sports hall. The flames were dropping down either side of us. I think I worked till 4 o'clock in the morning, removing bodies from the scene, taking them to the mortuary. I have to say that I recall that the public helped very much all the way through in very many ways, some at police headquarters. But what struck me was that the people that we were generally arresting for violence, for stealing, for poaching, etc., those were the ones that were helping the police and fire brigade, etc., with the removal of the bodies from the scene. It's always stuck with me, that has.
At that time, we also noticed there were two little boys sitting in the pool beneath the waterfall, just outside the building. And we had to get them out as well. But they were the last people which we seen in the building, apart from ourselves.
Well, there's a certain amount of calm that's overtaken the proceedings now. And the place is just a shell. It's been going half an hour, and the place is just a shell. The framework, it's like as if it was made of matchboxes. Thick black smoke still belching over Douglas Harbour. And still shocked faces, obviously, from people who were 1 minute... enjoying all the amenities of Summerland, and now this. In half an hour, the place just now simply does not exist.
Up until midday, everyone had been kept well away from the burnt-out shell of the building. And then, this afternoon, for the first time, we were allowed to take pictures from just outside of what was the Summerland Pleasure Complex. From this close range, the grim reality of what occurred when fire swept through the building on Thursday night became all too apparent. From the tangled mass of charred remains of furniture and other fittings, it was not difficult to see why the search for bodies became such a prolonged operation. Today, the experts were particularly keen to find any remaining bits of the acrylic sheet, which, according to some reports, melted, dropping balls of fire on people trying to flee the burning building. But there was very little to be found in the wreckage.
The following morning,
I went with Dr. Ferguson, the police surgeon at that time, to St. George's Hall, which had been set up as a temporary mortuary, and we there saw a very sad sight of all the victims laid out on white sheets. We got to work with the police, a very strong team of police, under Chief Inspector Bob Corran, and we enlisted the aid of a dental specialist from Manchester, Mr. Holt, and we all worked together the whole of that week, getting the information of missing persons and gradually identifying one by one. And Mr. Holt did a terrific job in making all the final identifications, some of them extremely difficult. At any rate, we then had to open the inquests. I think there were somewhere in the order of 48 or 49. The inquest had to be opened, of course, in order to allow for the burials of the persons, and their relatives naturally wanted that part of it to be over as soon as possible.
I would also ask any boarding house keepers in the Isle of Man who have visitors staying with them who have not been in during the night to report to Douglas Police Station any of their boarders who are missing tomorrow morning so far as the staff are concerned. That would be helpful to us. With regard to the identification of people who are dead, this of course will be a very difficult task, and it will probably be several days before this, and perhaps even weeks before this, is finally concluded. I think tonight that the services of the Isle of Man, fire, civil defence, and the police, and the general public have been extremely helpful. There has been a complete freedom of movement in the Summerland area by the major services that have been involved, and that was largely due to the fact that diversions were put on and that we did have the cooperation of the general public. Tomorrow morning, the same situation really exists. Summerland obviously is gutted. It can be in a very dangerous state. And by daylight, of course, we shall be able to see much more. But tomorrow morning and throughout tomorrow, diversions will still operate, and we would ask people approaching Douglas from the Onken direction or wishing to go towards the White City to avoid the promenade in the Summerland area. Certainly, if you try to get through, you'll be stopped by police. It is necessary to do this because, obviously, tomorrow morning and throughout the day, there will be inspections of the building from a safety point of view, and of course the police inquiries and fire inquiries that have to go on are best done without interference from the general public. So I know that tomorrow morning and throughout the day people will want to see the damage at Summerland. That's understood. I would ask you to cooperate with the police and keep away as far as you can from the site of the building so that we do continue to do our work with a reasonable amount of peace. It's a very sad occasion. There's a lot of work to be done, and I ask for the general cooperation of the public.
One knows of a thing like this happening in your building. I mean, I don't know whether it's possible to imagine how terrible all my partners and my colleagues and myself feel about this.
Well, an official booklet about the history of the Summerland Centre said this, and I quote, "With an entertainment centre of this size, fireproofing was another major factor. Nothing could be left to chance. The main structure was ideal, solid, concrete, non-combustible. Acrylic sheeting and internal fittings had to be of the same kind. How do you explain the way the fire spread so quickly?"
Well, clearly, I can't explain this. This is the most terrible part about this, because all these considerations were gone into. It's not just by ourselves, but we have to deal with all sorts of authorities, with building inspectors, with fire prevention people from the local authorities. We looked into this not only in our own office here, but also with our colleagues in the Isle of Man. We spent time and discussed in great detail all these problems with the fire officers who work in Douglas Corporation for the island, and also with Trust House Forty's fire prevention officer, who we spent time with. They're the tenants, or were the tenants, for Summerland itself. And, of course, we also have to deal with the insurance fire experts, and they are very expert people, and we have to satisfy them with all these factors.
Now, it's true the roofing was made of a substance called oroglass, and according to the Egremont scale, it's classified as not fire-resistant.
I'd rather not answer questions, I'm sorry, on the technical details of these materials, but these materials were gone into with not only these manufacturers, but also the fabricators. A great deal of work's been done with them to choose the most suitable materials, which were supposed to be of what is technically described as a medium to low fire spread characteristic.
Now, it's always concerned me why a lot of people, well, most people, in actual fact, who died were gassed. The cause of this was the main refrigeration system for the building had one compressor behind the garden bar on the same level as the show bar. This compressor supplied gas, freon gas, through copper pipes around to various cooling points in the show bar and the bar areas. Now, I'd had experience with freon gas as an engineer at sea, and I knew that under circumstances of heat or flame being near it, it burnt and turned to phosgene. So by the time I got back to the ground floor and round to the back of the building, the fire brigade said, "Don't go in, there's a very severe gas in there."
A number of questions remain even after 50 years. The way the materials used, in particular the oroglass, burned so destructively, the availability and access to emergency exits. Also, if any of those emergency exits were in fact locked. I've been told that some youngsters would organise one of their number to buy an entry ticket, and once in, to open an exit and allow their friends, free of charge, into the building. Were the exits locked to avoid that happening? 50 years have passed, so we must acknowledge that the value of the complex itself at £2 million was a colossal sum at that time. Three Liverpool boys appeared in court some time later in connection with the starting of the fire.
On the Isle of Man, three schoolboys from the Liverpool area have told a juvenile court that a cigarette they shared caused the fire at the Summerland Leisure Centre last month. 49 people died in the fire. The boys admitted breaking into a kiosk where they smoked a cigarette and damaging the lock on the door. For this, they were each fined £3 and each ordered to pay compensation of 33 pence with 15 pence costs. The boys, two aged 12 and one 14, had arrived on the island on the afternoon before the fire with their parents by steamer from Liverpool. They were questioned 11 days later by Liverpool and Bootle police. They'd all made statements which were read to the court. One of the 12-year-olds said they hadn't done anything on purpose. He couldn't have put the cigarette out properly because the kiosk and the stuff inside caught fire and set the whole centre on fire very quickly. They'd tried to stamp it out, but it had got too hot and dangerous, so they ran away. He'd been too scared to admit this before and was sorry he'd told lies. The boy of 14 said they'd all tried to put out the fire. He was scared about having started a fire in which all the people had been killed. The third boy said the kiosk had just set the whole place on fire while they were watching. The island's deputy fire officer said his office was still waiting for a forensic report and it wasn't possible to say that the fire in the kiosk had caused the disaster until then.
The penalties placed on them might seem ridiculously small now, but again, this was half a century ago. The three were never publicly named. Though, of course, in some quarters it'll be known who they were. They will have lived their lives knowing that 50 people died and hundreds of others will have appalling memories of that August evening that will probably haunt them for the length of their lives. Two granite blocks bear the names of those who died. It's placed in gardens at the bottom of Summerhill in Douglas. A few hundred yards away, the colossal wreck of the Summerland site is a wasteland, and with the condition of the cliff face and other financial aspects, putting a halt to attempts to build a replacement. For those over a certain age, it remains a grim reminder. In the next programme in this series, we'll look at tourism on this island since Summerland. A target of 500,000 tourists a year has been set. Too ambitious? Or by using what is already on offer, the hills, the glens, and with growing popularity, swimming in the sea, can the island rebuild the trade that made us famous? I'm John Moss, Gowcarail.